CataractCoach.com podcast series, episode number 71 with Roger Zaldivar. Are phakic IOLs the future of refractive surgery? And how to use AI to determine ICL sizing? Welcome back to our Cataract Coach podcast. And today I have a very special guest, Dr. Roger Zaldivar from Argentina. You've known the name for a long time because he's from a very famous family. His father's an ophthalmologist. But he's recently come in the spotlight for a really clever innovation, and that is he has figured out the secret to phakic IOL Vizient ICL sizing. And that's always been a challenge. So welcome to our podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. It's really a pleasure to be here. I've been a big fan of you and your podcast, so I'm very happy to be. It's thrilling to have the opportunity to be with you here.
Oh, so happy to have you. Now, I've been watching with a lot of interest the way you have figured out how to size the ICL, because for those who may not know, these phakic IOLs come not only in dioptric sizes, but in physical dimension sizes too.
Yeah, it's interesting because we have always spoken about the how incredible the ICL was in terms of optical quality and in results and the ability to have extremely happy patients. But sizing or lens selection has always been there of like the kind of the, let's say, something that can be optimized. I'm not going to say a weakness, but something that truly could have been done better. And today, since we are living a revolution in terms of AI, in image processing, in quality of images, same that is happening with everything, we can apply it to sizing, and we are getting best results in our life. We can get deeper and deeper if you want, but basically we're not having outliers today in terms of sizing, which is something that drives your confidence to the sky.
Right. But if the sizing is off, if the lens is too large, then you have too much of a vault. You can have pushing the iris forward, you can have shallow AC. If the vault's not enough, you can have contact with the crystalline lens. So there's a delicate balance.
Yeah, so we remember that we are speaking about younger patients. So the ICL is a vision correction procedure. It's an elective vision correction procedure. So we are speaking about patients with 20, 22, 30 years old, in the 40s, that's the range. And we do have to think about the procedure that has to remain in the eye for 30 years. Years. So the ability to have precision and to control vault, to be able to truly tailor-made that vault for each patient, gives you the possibility to do it more and more in a standard base. And that's exactly what we have been doing. It's not only an option for high myopes or the last option for low myopes whenever you don't have any other possibilities. Today, the ICL for us is, we take it in the first line of selection of vision correction. So whenever we don't like the cornea, we have some dry eye, we have some noisy cornea, whatever, or thin cornea, we don't do PRK. We just think that a patient with ICL, even in a -3 or -4, since we have the ability and the confidence to deliver exactly what we are envisioning, is by far the best option that we can give them. So this is a new era for sure. And when you think about the amount of ICLs that are being performed today, I think there is way underperformed. So I think that the amount of ICLs that are going to start implanting worldwide after this method gets universally validated, I think it's going to drive it's going to grow in an important way.
Now, what are the input variables you're using? So you're looking at white to white, you're looking, what things are you putting into the calculation?
So white to white is by far the measurement that we don't see, we don't use it.
So that's the old way of doing it from 10 years ago.
That's what my father started doing it at the beginning of the 90s, yes. So today, the interesting thing today is that there is not a single input that we are putting. One of the interesting things that the ICL guru, that is the formula that we have, the algorithm, the method that we have created, is that it's completely non-linear. It's non-linear. So what we are doing is we are getting images, image processing, and we are just putting a group of frames that we are selecting from UVM. This is 100% UVM based. You cannot do ICL Guru without the UVM. We cannot extrapolate from anterior chamber what we suppose is in the posterior chamber. We can do better than white to white, but not enough. OCT is not enough to get the precision that we are getting. So how do we improve the methodology that we used to do with UVM? Because UVM is technician dependent.
Right. First,
it's technician dependent. The quality of images sometimes are not very good. It's not very well aligned. So we developed a system to improve and to standardize UVM, which is very important. So what we are doing is we are putting a traffic light in the UVM measurements, and we detect the best frames of a video so that we extract automatically the best frames. So you understand? So if you put a video, we are going to get the best 50 frames that are perfectly aligned. With that food is what we then process with AI, and we run a calculation automatically. We don't have to put any input. It does everything automatic. It reads the configuration of the eye, and it throws the output. It will tell you exactly what is going to be the result for a 12.1, 12.6, 13.2, and 13.7 ICL, plus not only the central bulb. It gives you the peripheral bulb, because this is very important. After 10 diopters, you need to measure peripheral bulb. Why? Because we have a second curvature. You know, the ICL in low power is like this. You have only one posterior curvature, one posterior. In high power, you have a thicker periphery because the lens is a negative meniscus, and you start having a second curvature. That's very important because the peripheral is thicker. You need central bulb and peripheral bulb. You might have a minus 18 IOL, minus 18 ICL, with 400 microns touching the periphery. You see what I'm saying? That's it. The other thing that we do with ICL Guru is measure the residual angle of the anterior chamber. And that's why we ask an anterior chamber OCT, because it's much nicer to have the pre-op angle so that we can run the calculation. It's complex, but I'm looking forward for you to use it, because I'm sure that you will love it.
So that's interesting. So we, like a surgeon, would upload a video file of the UVM. Your software will go through the video file. Let's say it's 30 frames a second or 60 frames a second. It'll pick up the best 50 frames automatically.
Exactly.
And then process those images, and from that, tell you all the appropriate parameters, like the sizing, but I'll tell you what the vault will be. You said peripheral vault even, and also anterior chamber angle.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And the best news is that it's not going to be necessary now for you to get the video or anything. You can do this directly from the UVM devices. There are two or three very, very important UVMs worldwide. One is Sonomed, that is the one, the ViewMax. That is the first one that we started, and it's really, really good. The other one is the R-Scan that we are doing some very good testing too. So the idea in the future is to be fully agnostic and to be able directly with the bottom in each UVM to run the calculation and don't have to do anything, because we understand the value of avoiding double data entry. As a user, I hate when I have to put the same name in another place, do other things, and even if everything is transferred automatically, but just the fact to have to upload the names two times is a pain. So we are trying to make it really easy.
That's very, so of the, let's say of 100 patients you do fake IOL for, for ICL, and what percent of those 100 do you get the vaulting exactly as you predict?
So today, for you to have in your mind, we are getting the mean absolute error that we are getting, mean absolute error in 12.6 is around 80 microns. In 13.2 is around 50 something. And in 13.7 is around 60. That's the mean absolute error. The maximum error, the maximum that we are getting is around 307 microns, which is incredible. We've never had this amount of precision.
Wow.
But the most important message to get there, I think, is the ICL has always been there. It's an extremely forgiving platform. It's a great platform. The material is unique. You can do it even with the methodology that we have today and have amazing results, because the platform is forgiving. it's a platform that the material is so good that it will try to adapt to the eye configuration, and most of the time everything will be ideal. We want to take this to the next level. Why? Because we believe from a concept point of view that whenever the surgeon is in control of something, your levels of confidence are even higher and you start being more and more aggressive. If we know that patients are the happiest with this procedure, because I have the happiest results, happiest patient with this procedure, I want to apply it more and more. So today we have such a strong confidence that we are doing in shallow chambers, in shallower chambers, in extremely low myopes. We are doing a minus one if it's necessary. But that's a matter of confidence. It's a matter of confidence and being able to deliver what you truly want to deliver.
Wow. So you're offering, you know, for smaller diopter requirements. I'm not sure minus one's available in the U.S., is it?
No, it's not. In U.S. it's minus three, but it's perhaps in the future. But for now, I think you are from minus three to 20, and you have up to four diopters of astigmatism. We have up to six. Mm. It's always easier in the rest of the world, my friend.
That's for sure. Now, normally the criteria, the guidelines say you want AC depth of 3 millimeters, but you have experience in doing it even shallower.
We are doing in a consistent way in 2.6, 2.7, but in every day. Every day we have one or two patients with those shallow chambers.
Wow.
Which is even is really a more challenging case for sure, because if you of course, understanding this, you can infer that the angles from the scratch are shallower. So you have to be very precise. The beauty of this is that we avoid those cases that are uncomfortable. Again, ICL results are amazing. It has proven safety and efficacy with white-to-white. It works and everything is amazing. Once in a while, you get surprises in terms of outliers. And with this, we have completely erased those big outliers, the ones that you start feeling uncomfortable. I think that's the most important message here. With no outliers, important outliers, because a 300 micron, as I share with you, is not an important outlier. It's perfect. So with no outliers, it's something that you have it in your mindset, in your mind. You have it very fresh in every single patient. Whenever you see someone willing to have vision correction and it has minus six, minus seven, minus eight, there's no need to force the cornea for those diopters. We know that the more we correct, the more aberration we induce. So it's the virtuosity of the ICL is undeniable.
So in your spectrum of offerings for a patient come to see you,
yeah.
In what type of, let's say they're a 30-year-old patient, totally normal corneas. How do you know to steer them towards more keratorefractive, or we do more phakic IOL? And, you know, for various diopter products, like if someone comes in minus five, well, like you could do either. So how do you choose?
I'll be fully transparent. Minus five with perfect cornea, perfect tear film, it's very likely I do a LASIK for sure, a femto LASIK. That's for sure. But if the patient has minor dry eye, he's very uncomfortable with their contact lenses, he has a thin cornea, has some noisy cornea, anything that gets me somehow a little bit uncomfortable, I don't fight against that. The ICL is right there. So it's my choice from the scratch if there is something that is bothering me. Let's say the patient is minus six and a half. Well, I go directly to ICL. My cutoff is minus six. From minus six to and above is ICL from minute one. As soon as the patient gets in, no problem with that. First decision, minus six and lower, I just look at the different condiments to see if it's cornea or not. But I'm very open to do ICL in those patients.
And is the price much of an issue? Because in most centers, like for me, I think a guy is going to be more expensive than LASIK.
Yeah, but you know what? Your practice is in Beverly Hills, you know. And yesterday I was in Star Surgical. Yesterday, it's incredible. Now I'm in Argentina. Yeah, I was 2 days ago in Newport Beach giving a talk to all the reps from Star. And they tell me about this pricing issue and stuff. And I think it's all about the doctor. It's about the surgeon. If the surgeon is really confident and can show the excitement and how much excited for that procedure are and can extrapolate that value to the patient, the price won't be an issue. Of course, it's more expensive and everything. And I know your prices with ASC and all that. But the truth is, if you tell your patient, look, for your case, I strongly believe that this is the best option for you, not only because of safety, but this is the one that can deliver the best optical quality, visual quality. That's very strong. It's very strong. So it's all about the mindset. I think that in US, you are still in the curve of incorporating this in a very strong way with the confidence that you need to have in order to convert this in a stronger way. It's all about confidence. But it will take time, but you will get there.
Now, are you doing these procedures, these ICL, in your clinic, or are you doing the surgery center?
In my clinic, yeah. I think this is the perfect ASC, the perfect office-based procedure. This is the perfect office-based procedure because we do it with a minor, we don't use a sedation by anesthesiology. We just do a pill to relax, Xanax.
Xanax, yeah.
We do with Xanax. We put some intravenous minor sedation, minor. And with that, it should be more than enough. Good dilation of the pupil, and you can perform this surgery in a very proper way. But it's if you do it the right way, it's a surgery that takes 5-6 minutes, not more than that. And the beauty of this surgery is the recovery. The recovery, we have measured recovery against other vision correction procedures, including the new lenticule extractions, which is in the short term, the vision is much worse than femtolasic. And they see 20/20 at 4 hours.
Wow.
Because you are not touching the surface. Right. So it's so fast, the recovery.
So then you're putting a miotic agent at the end of surgery?
We don't do anything. They come with the pupil dilated 4 hours after the procedure just to check the IOP and everything. And we just, as a joke, we show them, see if you can see that. 80% are seeing 20/20, even with the pupil dilated 4 hours after the procedure. It's impressive. And I think those are the kind of things that really excite me in terms of saying we are just in the beginning. This is just the beginning of this technology. Now with AI, and this vision and this lens selection, new models and stuff, I think this is going to start growing in a different rhythm.
Do you have an upper age limit for this? Because I think in the US, the approval is 21 to age 45.
Yes, here we are doing it in a standard base, even up to 50 years old, 50, 51, 52, mostly in high myopes with the central flow. It's a complete different the performance of the lens in terms of cataract formation. We have shared this in Prague in my lecture, but basically now we are seeing that with the central flow, the amount of bolt that you lose in time is very, very little. So unless you are touching the lens, the bolt is much more stable. In the old days with the older versions, we used to lose around 300 microns in 15, 20 years, 300 even more. So whenever you finish with low volt, a couple of years after the procedure, they finish developing a cataract because they lose a lot of volt. Now with this new model and some extrapolation, we know that we are going to lose less than 80 microns in 20 years.
Wow, that's fantastic.
That's fantastic. So long story short, we are now able to do it in 50-year-old, 52, and basically we are using this as a bridge for the cataract surgery. We know how much the retinal detachment increases in these young myopes with and more if they don't have vitreous detachment. So whenever we see a patient willing to get rid of their glasses or starting to develop contact lens intolerance in their mid-40s, mid-50s, and they don't have cataracts and they're myopes and they're there, we just say, look, we can do this. We do a micro monovision and we are just building a bridge in order to perform a cataract surgery in a couple of years that your safety profile would be much higher in those days. And they're very happy with that.
Yeah, for sure. If you got a 50-year-old or 52-year-old who has still no PVD and you make him pseudophakic, you may induce a break in the retina, right?
And you know what, Uday, there's another very important thing that is precision. We know that since this is a formula the calculation of the ICL, that it's a refractive formula, mm-hmm. is very easy to be perfectly in terms of calculation. And we know how challenging sometimes these high myopes are. Despite right. formulas have improved a lot, still it's more complicated. With this, you know that you're going to be 98% of the times below 0.5 diopter of spherical equivalent, mean refractive spherical. So it's very precise. That's right. A very big advantage.
Right, because your calculation is based on the patient's actual refraction, not that's based on biometry.
Very important. That's very important. It's not a minor detail. Yeah.
So in your clinic, tell me about your clinic and how a new patient comes in, kind of what's the path for the patient? They'll probably send some information in advance.
We do some short questionnaire that they fulfill from their houses. But basically, we have a concept that we like dealing with everything in the same consultation. We don't want the patient coming a couple of times and more, because we have most of our patients coming from different places. So the patient will get in, they will do everything, OCT, fundus picture, refraction, of course, topography, everything. But of course, we are not doing a UVM in the day one, but we have everything in order to understand if it's a good candidate or not for any surgery. If we decide on an ICL, then the patient will come back and do all the pre-op, which incorporates the UVM. But it's the flow, it's designed to be able to decide in that first consultation.
So do all the testing at once, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. So it ran through a technician. It's pretty similar to the US model. It goes then with a refractive specialist that they will tell the patient which is what they consider to be the best option for them. We don't like giving the possibility to the patient to decide. Despite is something like our good friend Arthur Camis and Francesco are teaching all of us that we have to try to it's a decision that we are guiding with ourselves, right. We are coaching, but we are the ones in charge, and we are the ones that have to compromise and say, look, for your eyes, I do believe that the best option for you is this. Not say, look, you can do this, and that, because that's as we know, the paradox of choice. The more choices the patient has, the less suitable is the patient going to take a decision. You are just giving them too many options and too many doubts. So with the ICL happens exactly the same. You have to be very committed to the decision that you are showing. You cannot think about, let me put you one example, because I think this is very interesting. So if you are seeing a patient, and you say, look, you start speaking about, oh, you're a good candidate for LASIK. We have this femto here, and you will get rid of your glasses. Let's do a topography. Then the patient goes. They bring you a topography, or you start seeing the eye, and the patient has a terrible dry eye. And then you say, look, you know what? You weren't very good for LASIK, but we have other possibility to do this intraocular lens that sometimes it gets here and you are a little bit frightened even if how you sell it. So that's what I call idealization. If you start speaking about something before the patient has already idealized that the first option that you have offered is the best. The second option, they infer that it's not that good. So before sharing your cards with your patient, before speaking about what's you want to go, You have to shut your mouth. Don't say anything till you have decided exactly what you want to offer. That's the reason why I say it's all about mindset. I just jump on the option with ICL from minute one. I said, you know what? After reviewing all your exams and all your cases, I strongly believe that you are the very good candidate for this intraocular lens that is very nice. It's less invasive. This is a paradox. How can an intraocular procedure? Well, we are preserving the anatomy of the eye. Basically, we are not modifying the cornea. If we do a surgery, whenever you develop cataract in the next couple of in many years, we're going to take this ICL out and the cornea and the rest of the eye would be like virgin. And that's true. We are continually doing surgeries 30 years after that my father performed in 93, and the eye is, we just do a regular cataract surgery, nothing. Just have to take it away from 3 millimeter or 3.1, and you perform a small incision cataract surgery. So there is truly a beauty and an advantage of this procedure that will get more and more common for the rest of the surgeons.
Yeah, I think a lot of patients also like the idea that it's reversible. Exactly. Although it's so very unusual. Patients are so happy with it that it's very unusual to go actually and remove the lens, other than when you're doing cataract surgery. But patients like the idea that, okay, this is not permanent. If I don't like it, I can always go back.
Absolutely. The concept of reversibility or removability, because some would argue, okay, it's removable. Okay, it's kind of the same. But reality is that we have been asking for a new refractive procedure to relaunch the refractive market. That's what we have been asking in the last couple of years. And now that I do think that we have a new concept with this AI-powered ICL. It's not what we used to do. It's completely different. With the central flow, with Evo, that now you have it available in US, you now have the toric, and you now have access to this extremely improved methodology. It's a new procedure. You cannot put the same disc that what we used to do in the beginning of 2000 on that. This is a complete different procedure. So I think this is what, if we translate this confidence and we start becoming more and more used to doing this, it's going to relaunch our refractive procedure for sure. It's something that we measure. We measure a lot the word of mouth of each refractive procedure. And the one that brings us more patients are the ICL patients. Incredible. Wow. Because our femto LASIK is amazing. We cannot say anything against that because the precision, but the ones that bring us more patients of word of mouth are the ICL patients.
That's so, and I would not have predicted that. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So you think it probably has to do with, like, I guess because it's immediate recovery vision, and then also it's super high quality vision.
Exactly. That's exactly my theory. My theory is in two things. Is when do your patients receive the call of how was their surgery? As soon as they finished this, they went out of the OR, they put in their WhatsApp group, look, I just get out of my of the surgery. Are you seeing something? Well, not so much. Now I'm at the beginning of most of their procedures, even with cataracts. Well, yeah, tomorrow I'm in my healing process. Here, that same night, they're saying, I can't believe what I'm seeing. I'm already watching TV. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's the difference. It's a true wow effect. That's for number one, for sure. And the second one is quality of vision. Quality of vision is there for sure. If you remember the ICL, since it's in a retroiridial position, it has a 1.27 scale of the optical zone. So even in small myopia, we have like a bigger optical zone than the standard LASIK. That's very, very important. So, yeah. So for example, if you do a LASIK on a 6.5 optical zone, here you have like almost a 7.6. So it's bigger, the optical zone, in the low myopes. In the rest, it's very similar after 10 diopter. But those are the kind of things that we have to start bearing in mind for these patients.
Yeah, also the nice thing is that cost of entry for the surgeon is you don't have to buy a femtosecond laser or buy an excimer laser, which are very expensive. You basically need a surgical microscope, which you already have, and you just need a UBM machine.
Absolutely, absolutely. The other important thing to highlight is that this is a refractive procedure. Right. And one of the mistakes that I see in the guys that start doing ICL is that they, of course, most of us start with the high myopes, and we underestimate the effect of astigmatism. So if we are correcting a minus 15, minus 17, that has 1.5 diopters with the rule of astigmatism, we know that if we do an incision in the temporal side, we will induce even more astigmatism. Perhaps the patient finishes with 2 diopters. Mm-hmm. So we have to tackle the astigmatism too. We want spectacle freedom for those patients. So we operate with the rule in 100% of the patients, of course, when we are not doing toric. If you are doing toric, you're okay, it's temporal, and that's it. But for example, in a patient with one diopter with the rule, I would just do the surgery on the superior side.
Interesting.
That's very important, very important. And then you rotate the lens inside the eye to put it horizontal. But those are the details that make the difference. We cannot finish with the astigmatism just because we are used to do incision in the temporal side. We need to think in a refractive mindset.
Yeah, that's very important. Well, I'll have to see this video of you putting it so you'll sit superior, you'll make your incision on the steep axis, let's say 90 degrees with the rule, yes. Put the ICL in the eye, rotate it in the eye, and then position it.
Exactly. The way to do it is you put it in the vertical meridian, you get it in, you have it in the anterior chamber, you rotate to 45 degrees, just a little over the iris, and then in the maneuver you put it in, just not to, you cannot put it, do the tacking in the 90 and rotate inside the eye, yeah. Below the iris, because it hurts. It's already the lens in the ciliary process. You have to rotate over the iris very gently, and then you put it in. So it has less, there are details, you know how it's.
You'll have to send me a video. We can put it for the cataract coach video for tomorrow, day after the podcast.
I'd send you lots of videos right now, right after this.
Fantastic. That's good. Now let me change gears here a little bit. How'd you get started in ophthalmology? What was your career path? Could you do a different choice? Could you do orthopedics instead? Or you said, no, you have to ophthalmology.
You know, I could have done orthopedics because I love the sports. I used to play rugby and I had four surgeries in my shoulder, surgeries when I used to be a rugby player. So, my grandfather was an eye doctor too, a surgeon. And he told me one day one phrase that I always laugh a lot when we remember this. He told me, I started studying medicine. And after 1 or 2 years in medicine, he came and asked me, okay, are you going to follow ophthalmology? He was the dean of the university. Oh, my grandfather, lots of years ago, of course, he passed away. And he asked me, Roger, are you going to do ophthalmology? Well, I'm seeing because I like this and that. That was bullshit. I was going, but I just wanted to have some resistance. And he told me, you know what? If you are already studying medicine and you don't do ophthalmology, you are stupid. That was more or less, because his way of thinking, that he was very strict, was if I don't have the lab for medicine, it's okay, you can understand. I can be an architect or whatever. He will respect that. But if I'm already doing the hard work of starting medicine and everything, and I don't build over what has been built, it was a pity. That was more of the concept, of course, of a guy that was rising many, many years ago with very, you know, like the old days. But I started ophthalmology very, very early with my father, of course, my grandfather. I did a fellowship in visual optics in Arizona with Jim Schwiegerling, that passed away last year, was a very smart guy. So I really enjoy that visual strategy approach and different stuff. And then I studied a lot of stuff related to business, because I believe in sustainability and understanding the business and being able to be good doing your numbers and your stuff in order to provide a better service for your patients. I don't see it as something negative.
Right. You want to kind of focus on giving your patients the best, not just the surgery, but also the whole experience.
Exactly. So. Exactly.
Oh, very interesting. So now you're traveling a lot too. I've seen you recently at probably a few different meetings. I saw you in Prague. I saw you here, you know, you're here in the US now, and you're traveling extensively as well then.
So yeah, it's been wild these last 2 years, and I've been always very active with meetings and stuff. I think despite it's you lose the possibility to see more patients and stuff. You always learn from your peers, and those are where magic happens. And I've been very active with this ICL Guru stuff because I really want to have the possibility to put it in many, many places, because I'm very convinced that this will change the game for ICL. So I wanted to, at some time, I'm being the ambassador of what we are doing. So hopefully it's going to be available very soon for everyone.
Now, has your ICL volume then continued to grow? You say it's like the future, the new refractive procedure.
Yeah. So basically what we are doing today is we are around 1,000 ICLs per year, 1,000, which wow. for a clinic with and only my father and myself are doing perhaps half and half. So we're both doing 500. But it's being stable, and we you know, Argentina has lot of economic fluctuations, and but being stable in a place like this is a lot. We have recession, we have everything, but slightly we are starting to grow again, even in this recession. But our numbers are showing some important activity in this last couple of months. So I think the projections we're going to finish with even more ICLs this year. So that's very positive. And something very interesting to highlight is that we have 9 residents training in the institute. And from the 9 residents, 5 have already had ICLs in their own eyes. 5.
Oh, wow. That's.
But the most interesting thing here to highlight is that the 5 are inside LASIK numbers. So these five guys have less than 6 diopters of myopia, which is incredible. And I relate this 100% to what they see in patients. So we give them the option to go through a surgery. And they prefer going through an ICL because they see they are the ones doing the post-ops. And they see patient reaction. They see how fast they recover. They see how they have zero problem with dry eye. They see how happy these patients are. We have most of the patients, over 97-98% of patient satisfaction, which is quite unique.
That's so interesting. But you had 5 of your residents who are in the LASIK range, of a sweet spot of LASIK. You said mine is under -6.
Exactly.
And they all chose to have an ICL.
So those are the things that it's. That's why when you ask me, okay, why do you are so bullish on this technology? Why? Because this is what I see. I see that my own people is choosing this. I see the reaction. I see everything, and I see that if we do it in a more consistent way, it's going to become the most important vision correction procedure. Even it's more expensive. Even from at the first glance, you have to have an intraocular procedure, but it's only a matter of time.
That's very interesting. Maybe that'll breathe more life into the U.S. market. Because in the U.S., like the keratorefractive refractive volume has pretty much been stagnant for many years, many, many years.
That's what I'm saying. U.S., even with SMILE, it was like many people was bidding about, okay, SMILE will kill it and everything. You see, it's pretty flat. And it's not about the technology, because at the beginning they blamed that the technology wasn't the latest release and all that stuff. Today they have a pretty good algorithm and everything is working good, and still it's flat. It's not growing the numbers that they expect. People don't know the difference between a femto laser lenticle extraction against, they just put everything in the same box. It's laser. That's it. It's all in the same box. You spend more time explaining the keyhole surgery against the other surgery, LASIK surgery. It's the same. That's why you are switching cards. With the ICL, you are playing a different game. You are playing the premium game. You know about this. If I show you that you are going to, I offer you, you know what, today I'm going to give you a gift for this new year. I'm going to send you 2 options of hotels. You have a hotel in Monaco, it's 200 euros the night, and this hotel is 1,000 euros a night. At the first glance, you understand that the 1,000 euros is going to be better, for sure. So we need to reposition what we are doing. We need to reposition it. So the ICL gives you the entire opportunity to relaunch the premium vision correction surgery. But it's the first one that has to be convinced. It's not the patient, it's the doctor, the surgeon. And that's a click that you will start getting more and more now, achieving what you want with this control of bolt, with this precision bolt algorithm. It's just a matter of time.
No, I love it. Well, I love also the mindset. You say, you know, when the surgeon comes in there, is very confident, because part of the reason the patient's seeing you is not just for your hands, but it's for your judgment. and your opinion. You're the expert. So if you say to the patient, for your situation with your measurements, your anatomy, your desires, the best option for you is this procedure, period.
That's it. Who will go against what you believe? You are the one that knows about this. If you start, well, we have three options here. No, that's not the way to speak to a patient.
Yeah.
No, you get it.
You know, for sure. Yeah. You don't want to give them a big menu. You want to give them, here's the best. This is what you need.
That's what we do.
No, it makes a lot of sense. So I think it'll continue to grow. Certainly in other countries, especially in Asia, I think it's growing very large, especially with the high incidence of myopia.
Asia is impressive. In Korea, that is it's the second biggest, third biggest market, Korea, Japan, and China. China is ridiculous how big it is. They are growing double digits. This is for the last 10 years. But just thinking about the macro trends of myopia, we know that by 2050, we'll have 1 billion higher myopes, over 6 diopters of myopia, at least.
Wow.
1 billion in the world. So there won't be any other opportunity for them. Plus, what I told you, I think it's the ICL is coming for lower myopes for sure in the next couple of years. The possibility to relaunch refractive surgery is going to be there. So I guess they are going to start getting market share from the other two important vision correction procedures. Yeah.
Yeah, I think myopia is certainly going to keep growing. I see now even little babies, two-year-old kids playing on iPads and phones the whole day.
100%. And if you think about this, the ICL in the future, it's an additive procedure. And in all these Asian countries, to have an additive procedure is much better than to have something subtracting. It's a cultural point of view. But let's think about other things. How can you evolve femto LASIK? Or how can you evolve? Okay, it can evolve because they are improving every time. Smile. But the limits are quite there. It's how smooth you can do the surface, but you don't have many more things to do there. So you can do it faster. They're already doing it 10 seconds. There's no much more room to improve. The ICL is a hub. It's a vision correction hub. In the future, you know, you have technology. You have seen Apple Vision Pro. You have seen the crazy things that are used. What's the natural path? Where would you use it? You're going to use it in a fake KOL. Yeah. Or you see what I'm saying? So these have the possibility to be something to store your IOP, whatever. The more natural thing to have it is a fake KOL. So I think that there is a lot of room for improvement.
Do you work with any other competing fake KOL designs, or you just do this only?
No, I'm only doing this. Today we're only using ICL. I think that despite there are other fake KOLs there, the material of the ICL is something to really highlight. I had the opportunity to visit the company several times and to be in the process, which I was very fortunate because they share this, that is extremely, extremely private. And the quality of the material of the columnar, this is not just a story to highlight and to marketing. It's absolutely true. So we are seeing 30 years patients ICL extracted, and you put it under a microscope, you analyze, and they are like they were new. It's
wow.
It's impressive. And the columnar has some unique things that makes it so good, not only because of the high water content, which is well known, that is around 42%, that's very good, but it has a gradient because in the periphery it has fibrin, mm-hmm. which makes it so you have a transition between the different transition between the aqueous humor, the lens, and it's very gradually. So you don't have parasite light being lost in the different interaction. Most of the lights going through the lens pass in the proper way. It's nothing to do with an acrylic. So the other lenses are basically acrylic, hydrophilic hydrogels, and they are much stiffer and much more reactive when they get in touch with the crystalline lens. From a design point of view, they are good because they have done a good job. But from the material, there's no point of comparison.
Well, fantastic. So I'm glad you had a great experience with this and kind of can get some of your pearls. I definitely want to feature a video of one of your surgeries. So we'll talk about especially the superior incision.
I'm sending you everything, my friend. I want to be in that page.
No, I think it's great. I mean, time will tell to see how this all evolves.
Yeah. We'll have this conversation in 2 years and you will tell me. 2 years.
I the only sad part is Inkstar stopped making some of these IOLs that I liked.
Oh, you like the cataract IOLs?
They used to make the big one for the sulcus. We have an AQ2010V, 6.3 millimeter optic, 13 millimeter overall length, made the silicone ones, column ones. But it seems like they're out of the IOL game now and only doing ICLs.
Yeah, they're out, and that was an internal decision. But they might come back. We'll see. I think having that material is a pity because I do believe that there's no material in the whole world used inside the eye with these properties.
Now, do you think there's a future of having, let's say, hyperopic corrections or presbyopic corrections in these?
We have hyperopic ICLs. We use it.
Outside the U.S. then?
Yeah, outside U.S. It's more a niche. It's more a niche because, of course, these high hyperops most of the time have shallower chambers. Right. You do have exemptions, but it's 10% or even less of what the amount of ICL we do. And we have the presbyopic ICL. It's not that easy. We are finding good fit in higher myopes, still learning about it, but they are still looking for the best way to apply it in the standard patients. But they are there.
How much is the hyperopic correction you have there now, from plus one to plus?
We have up to plus 10. Plus 10. Wow. No, we have tons of patients with plus 10 with more than 25 years of follow-up. The good thing that I can share about that is that two things. One, we have never seen a patient with hyperopia with a cataract. Never.
Why?
Because they don't have the posterior. It's only one posterior curvature.
Oh.
So if you have any circulation in the back, you won't develop cataract. Any circulation. If you have 15, 10, 20 microns, it's enough. So that's very positive. The second very interesting thing is that since it's a spherical IOL, we have patients with plus 10 and done many, many years ago, and they have much more pseudo accommodation than standard patients, these high hyperops. Oh. So they have very nice range of vision, very nice, which is good because it's like a bonus that they get.
So for a presbyopic patient coming in, you'll do a little mini monovision or micro monovision?
Yeah, today I feel very comfortable just leaving minus 0.75, the non-dominant, and that's kind of enough to do your daily activities, basically. I tell them this is not a presbyopic procedure, but we are doing this strategy to fulfill their daily task, and whenever they need more, they can just use some occasional spectacles.
Oh, for sure. And it kind of also makes sense that they're coming from minus 10, and even if you leave minus 0.75, they're going to be thrilled even.
Yes, and remember, exactly, this we have two different myopes. You have the myopes that are truly functional with their near vision, that are the ones that have less than four diopters, because whenever you have more, your near vision is too close. Mm-hmm. They start reading here and they lose the computer. But whenever you have more than four or five, then imagine a minus 10. The beauty of the ICL, more if they are not using contact lenses. Why? What is the difference if you use contact lenses or spectacles?
Oh, image unification. Yeah.
The spectacle plane. So these guys win a lot of magnification. Every diopter gets you 2% of minification. Right. So with 10 diopters, you get 20% smaller image in the retinal plane. So these guys are winning. They're winning one or two lines of far vision against the spectacle. That's very powerful. And that's a good message even to mention to the patients. I always tell them, look, with your myopia, we have 30% of chances, of course, and I share with them my statistics, 30% of chances of winning at least one line. We have 22% of chances of winning two lines, and we have 12% of chances of winning three lines if they come with spectacles over 10 diopters.
Right. But then it works the other way too. I had recently a patient who was a high-hyperope cataract patient. So I did IOL surgery. And patient went from like plus nine or plus eight to plano. And the patient says, yeah, but now everything looks smaller. Because they're used to wearing the big plus nine glasses that gave so much image magnification.
Absolutely, absolutely. Oh, that's it. You will always find guys like that.
Interesting patient. So, and then when you get these patients kind of moved out of the ICL and into let's say an IOL for cataract surgery. So
So basically, whenever I see that they start losing quality of vision, for example, we did, let's say in 2005, an ICL, and we check the patient is in their 60s, and we see that the patient is minus one because it has a nuclear opacification. Are you losing me? Because I see some fluctuation. Am I
no, we're
okay?
good.
Okay. So you have not some mild cataract or anything, or some residual error. We just take the ICL out and we do the cataract. So it's no doubt about that. The beauty of this, as I told you, is that it goes out through 3.2 millimeter incision, so you can perform a small cataract surgery, small incision, and we are open to do a VVT or any EDOF-IOL or even in lower myopes, a trifocal, if it fits.
For sure.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. Well, I want to thank you again for doing our podcast. Really enjoyed speaking with you. Learned a lot of good insight here. Some new pearls that I didn't quite realize, like why the hyperopic ICLs don't get cataracts because it's the lens design, only one curvature. So brilliant stuff. Again, we'll feature your video tomorrow with the one you said about superior incision and rotating the ICL in the eye.
I'll
But
send
again,
you
thank you so much.
all the videos tonight so that you can upload them. And it was a real pleasure to spend time with you, my friend.
Thank you. And I want to remind our viewers and listeners, remember, we have a new podcast every Sunday. Everywhere you find your podcast, Apple, Amazon, Google, Spotify, you name it, you'll find the podcast there. And of course, we still have a new Cataract Coach video every single day, including a really neat video coming tomorrow about how to do this ICL with a superior incision and rotating in the eye. We'll see you next time.